Thank you. And for those of you who may be new tonight, we will start with a meditation, and then there will be followed by a Dharma talk. And if there's time, an opportunity for asking a few questions. The focus tonight for the Dhamma talk will be about change. And so as we begin the meditation sit, there's this invitation to accept, to be open to the experience of change and that which does not change. We are going to be doing the arriving sequence, which is composed of arriving to the point we become mindfully available and then aligned with Dhamma. As we undergo this preliminary practice, this evening, it's in the context of a new year. A new year that is arbitrarily decided traditionally based on the longest night of the year and the first then of the new year. But nonetheless, we are holding it as a new year. We experience it as a new year. And as we will learn, we need to do that. There's something in us that needs that organizing, that acknowledgement. And so as we begin arriving, we're arriving in a new year. A new cycle in the seasons. Arriving here. Arriving now. Learning how to connect with this wholesome intention of arriving. Arriving here in the space in which you're sitting. Arriving here in our Sangha, where we're all sitting together, apart and together. All sitting is alone and together when we're in Sangha in person. Arriving. At some point we feel that we, in fact, can experience the immediacy of now, the immediacy of this moment. And that indicates that our mindfulness is starting to be present, starting to be established. Only through being mindful of the moment can we truly be in the moment. Available for responding skillfully, available for relating to what's arriving in this very moment, externally and internally. So clear that we wish to be available in this manner. Why? Because it gives us the possibility of choice, of choosing what? Of how we relate to the moment. Again, the wholesomeness of this whole three-part series of coming into the moment. This feeling of being available is both an act of empowerment and a surrender. Empowered because we're present. We know what's going on, and we have the agency that comes from being present and allowing us to choose how we relate to what comes on. But it's also a surrender that we acknowledge we cannot control this moment. There's conditions that we cannot control. We can't even control our own behavior at times, and certainly not our mind. The mind can go anywhere, think anything. We can identify with anything the mind creates. And this surrender to the truth of that is why we realize that it's not enough to just be here and available, not just enough to have arrived and being available moment to moment, but the need for an alignment that protects us from this mind that's capable of thinking anything, of getting confused about anything, and leading not just to words but also unskillful actions, unskillful behavior that can be harmful to ourselves or to others. And so we align in this tradition. We align with the Buddha in whatever form is natural. You may choose to be aligning with something else that you deeply value, that's a core value. We are engaged in a Buddhist tradition, in a Buddhist meditation. So we align with the Dhamma. Align with the Buddha, if that's what inspires you. Align with the Dhamma itself. Or align with the what is being carried by Sangha. Whatever protects, whatever inspires us. Really notice if you get that, that your motivation in choosing to be aligned is for your own protection and for being able to protect others. And for inspiration, an uplifting to your practice, brightening it, bringing energy, remembering what matters. So we can align with the Eightfold Path. I align with wise view and wise intention. I term wise view, the first of the Eightfold Path, is wise aspiration, because that's how it feels to me. I aspire in this moment towards how close I get is way beyond my immediate control to what I aspire to. The aspiration gives me direction, and it gives me humility. So valuable, both of them. Wise intention is this very moment, the second of the Eightfold Path. It brings me, keeps me in, empowers this moment-to-moment mindfulness in a direction, in an immediate choice. I choose what is non-harming. I choose what is kind. In both instances, as best I am able. I also choose to renounce that which hinders the mind, such that I can't choose, would not be able to choose non-harming, not be able to choose kindness. So I am prepared to renounce feelings, emotions, wants that would hinder my ability to choose non-harming, to choose kindness. I choose as best I am able. In this moment, I intend, but always with the modesty, the humility, to acknowledge that I am just one more on a path. It does not dilute the resolution of aligning, but actually allows us to feel it more fully by this acknowledgement. What better time than the beginning of a year to acknowledge that our practice is always in the context of as best I am able. To me, this touches my heart. I feel sincere to myself, authentic, because I know that, in fact, as best I am able is something I can do, and I can hold myself accountable, and I can surrender to the way it is. And I can forgive myself and others. So powerful, this aligning. In many ways, our whole sit, the beginning of a year, should just be arriving, available, and aligning. This preliminary practice before we turn to objects that arise in the mind. It's a reflective practice. It's a contemplation. It's a collecting and unifying of the mind before objects, before our regular satipatthana practice. There comes a moment when we do feel aligned. We are in touch with this higher aspiration. It can be a mental recognition or a felt sense. That felt sense can have an uplifting. It can have a little energy surge. It can have a relaxing. It can be so tender. and we start to realize that we are available and aligned, or aligned and is available, whichever way you experience these two. We've arrived in the fullness of the preliminary practice. It is our first ground for knowing the Dhamma, the preparing to know the Dhamma. Can be so modest, even more modest than that. This available, aligned, aligned, available is so easily satisfied. It's modest needs. The reason is there's so little selfing activity. Collecting the mind, attuning the heart. People will say that sometimes. From this ground of being, we turn our attention to the objects that will arise in the mind, body, and heart as we turn first to the body, gently moving the mind, gently moving attention to the physicality of experience. Feeling the body in its whole, maybe the form, or its weight, or it may be a whole set of sensations throughout the body, changing sensations, or a cluster of just a few sensations, or even a single body sensation. We recognize there is a body, just as the Buddha instructed. A body that is embedded with awareness, or embedded in awareness, if you prefer. But it's not a body that it lacks awareness. Sometimes realizing this can be so intimate that it kind of makes us uneasy or embarrassed or uncertain. This courage, because we are aligned, we can feel the vulnerability of this awareness in a body that is subject to change, subject to old age, sickness, and death. And we hold this with knowing, with compassion, and with the, knowing the truth of it. Here and now become more precious, possibly, or more delicate, or more vibratory. the anicca of the body can lead us to a dropping in. Deeper, more settled space. You can notice the earth element in the body, that which is firm, hard, and heavy. Earth element, earth element. Weight underside in the arms, weight underside in the legs, weight underside and the pelvic bowl. Inviting the earth element in the body to simply rest on earth. To not hover. To not push in. But to just be with what's the truth of the experience, the felt sense of the experience just now. This earth element has so much stillness. Can you feel it? The attention can become still like the stillness of the earth element. Still. Very still. And yet still moving. There's a steadiness to the earth element. And the mind starts to mirror that steadiness. To settle and sit still and steady. At some point, we start to notice the breath, which is part of the body. And we recognize the wind element in the movement of the breath. In, out, long, short. This movement we discover that if we have employed the steadiness of the earth element in our attention, that this moving object of the wind element called breath remains a steady experience. There's in changing to out and out to end in terms of breathing. And yet the attention can be so steady. The knowing of the experience is a steady knowing. And we more fully drop in. Drop into what? To the knowing of experience. Dropping into being present so that we can participate in how we relate to whatever is arising, including the breath. Steady, steady, steady. We notice that the mind wanders away. Sometimes it's wandering away from a very pleasant state. There is a settledness to the mind, and yet it wanders. Other times there's something agitating it. And that's why it wanders. We're drawn to that agitation, like an itch. We want to pay attention to that itch. And even though right now it's only a mental concept, we actually have a felt sense of that itch, that disturbance that's pulling us away. This is natural. This is the untrained mind doing what it does. Just pause when you realize the mind has wandered. Just pause. In this moment, you are awake. Awake to what? Awake to that you are available and aligned. Awake to the fact that you have choice as to where to place attention once again. And you don't mind that it's once again. You've embraced patience implicitly. And so you then choose, knowing you're choosing, choose to be once again with the breath, to join attention and wind element together. This non-resisting to what is, but still applying intention. Intention from a wise view. Okay. Can you feel the wise view? It has wisdom and a kind of compassion. So the mind, heart, wisdom and compassion. Here in this one moment's breath. Steadiness of experience. Not demanding anything, but available, choosing the steadiness of attention as best we're able. And then at some point, just possibly, maybe tonight, maybe not tonight, you feel the heart opening another level. The wholesomeness, tangible, tasteable, delightful. The wisdom reassuring. You remember that you are available and aligned. Aligned and available. And so you become grounded in the body through this preliminary practice. Tonight, your experience may be one of restlessness, or you're fretting about something. Or you're tired and sleepy. Or wanting or not wanting. You're so tired of not wanting. You're so tired of wanting. Even though practice is what will most help change these hindrances that rest upon us at times, we feel like we can't be mindful. So we kind of secretly or not so secretly give up ourselves. Give up on ourselves. The opposite is that we employ as best I am able. I'm with the breath at this moment as best I am able. Herein lies the path to empowerment. To enablement. And so we cultivate the paramis, these attainments of mind, heart, of patience. We have the patience to start over. We have the persistence to start over. It is with these same qualities of patience and persistence that allow us to bring about change in our lives. It is being able to stay present in the body, to recognize this awareness that knows that allows us to direct the felt, develop the felt sense. So beautiful, the Dhamma. So ever useful. When we are truly aligned, it is so forgiving. To me, it really is beautiful, the Dhamma. So necessary to surrender. Conquer is such an illusion. But change is a reality. It's a truth. We can align in such a way that we dramatically increase the wisdom of the changes we seek, and we dramatically increase our ability to bring about changes, small ones for sure, but also large ones. Really amazing, this Dhamma. Freely offered, no requirements. In this new year, is there the possibility of a deeper relationship, a more understanding relationship with Dhamma as you know it, as you experience it? So wholesome, so wholesome. A way of being rather than collecting a bunch of results and trying to make those results into a kind of well-being. Subtle, this Dhamma of ours, and yet also simple. And what is so amazing is that it's really genuinely true that we can start just how we are. Anytime, just how we are. We may fall asleep 2 minutes after we start, but that's the momentum going forward as we sleep. We aimed in a wholesome direction. We sustained for 120 seconds. It's inherent in that alignment. Very delightful once we see that. Are we always going to see it? Are we always going to find comfort in it? Maybe you, but not me thus far. But if when we do, my goodness, because it will come around again. And we know it will come around again because it always has thus far. We just don't know how long it will be in between we get this connection. And therefore, again, the surrender and forgiving of ourselves, all of our shortcomings. How are we ever going to bring about change in our lives if we're spending so much of our energy being mad at ourselves or someone else's shortcomings or the world's shortcomings or angry at God, if God is a way that you relate? How are we ever going to get anywhere? Taking all of our energy, being indignant, needing to be right, needing to be seen in our injury. It's not so easy, this kind of forgiving. Not so easy. Could we begin this new year with the forgiving? It's possible. It's possible. Or a surrender. Yes, that didn't work out the way that I had hoped it would. And I surrender to that truth. Yes, that person I loved is no longer with us. And I surrender to that truth. I surrender to the truth of Anicca, the truth of change. Here at the beginning of a change of a year. So simple, so immediate, but we make it so, so complicated. Tonight, I would like to focus on Dharma teachings or Dharma lessons for seeking internal and external change. From Dharma lessons that will allow us to be more skillful in how we do align, more skillful in being available for the very change we want, no matter why, where those changes come from. You know, we want to have a new color of paint on our bathroom walls. That's fine. It doesn't have to be so lofty, but rather how we're aligned with it. And sometimes it's in the worldly changes that we get to practice bringing the Dhamma, because some of these more internal changes are too charged for us. We get lost. We get consumed in our needing it or our feeling inadequate for it or our story around it all. So to be modest in relation to what change we might choose to focus on in this period of time. Not to say that we can't aspire to the largest of large, but sometimes the way to the largest is in being able to first orient ourselves to something modest, and our systems don't shut down. Whereas if we just immediately turn to, you know, I want to be enlightened this year, it's a little challenging for the system to, like, oh yes, okay, we're all lined up to support you. A little hard for that. Again, at least that's my experience. So this modesty of that may my practice develop a little this year. May my practice, maybe for you, it's may I understand a little more about the mind being able to collect itself, to be collected and unified. Or may I understand a little more about the first satipatthana, that of awareness of the body, mindful of the body. Or the second satipatthana, may I understand more fully how pleasant and unpleasant and things that are neither pleasant nor unpleasant affect my life. Just to understand it more emotionally or psychologically, or to start to see that I have choice, that just because something's unpleasant, that does not have to define my relation to it. I don't have to become that unpleasantness. It does not have to be mine. It doesn't have to. There is choice. And I can easily prove that to myself, most amazingly. I can easily prove that I do have choice when I am present and aligned. And the same with the third satipatthana in relation to the mind states and the emotions that accompany mind state. That there is choice. There is choice that if I have a habit towards anger given to a given person, I can reduce the intensity of that. I can reduce the frequency, the duration, by a small amount. But through modesty, not through I'm the conqueror of all of this. This year I'm really resolved. But no, may I be able to? May I learn how? May I be available to learn how to not get caught in this same way? So the very aligning is already wholesome. The attitude is already is pure in motivation. How do we relate to change? Change at the beginning of a year comes about because of the nature of the ending of the fall season and the beginning of the winter, the end of the days of light and the beginning of the days of darkness, as that we are in a period of dark days. And we experience this at this time of year in this hemisphere, for those of us who are in the northern hemisphere. And you can see why people, because of planting, because of hunting, because of not being able to wander around so easily when the days are short, that they dealt with change in a responsive way to nature. Very beautiful, very beautiful. And we can do the same. We're wired. We've got thousands of years of wiring that would allow us to do this. That can give us some confidence. Change also comes about, this orientation towards change, I mean, because we have developed this tradition of making a marking here. And again, you can imagine farmers sitting around when they can't do anything in the fields going, oh, let's plant this year. Let's try this. Ah, when we go back out, do we want to try to find a new place that we might dwell along the river rather than this place we are now? Imagining that. Having this idea of change. So again, it's built in to our system. And so we have New Year's resolutions. These big life orientations get reduced to, what are your New Year's resolutions? But it is within that. It is within that same field. So let's take it. Let's employ it wisely if this is something that works for you. And then we start to see why we would wish to be more mindful to what the Dharma can teach us about our implementing our New Year's resolutions and even our changing our resolutions, because you can always change them. After all, they're yours. So you can update them, you can modify them, you can dismiss them, or you can double down in your embracement of them. As we do this, we see that change can arise, this wanting a change, wanting to have to be resolute about something, because we have a sense of wanting something. or a sense of not wanting something. Do you recognize that from the second noble truth? That our relationship, our difficult relationship with the difficulty in life, the dukkha in life, the unsatisfactoriness, the unreliableness of life, that we get caught in sense desire. That's the first of the three tanhas, thirst that we get as human beings. So we get caught in wanting our sense desires to be some way, and our resolution can be around our sense desires. Or our resolution can be around wanting to become something, wanting to become more skillful at something, externally or internally. Or wanting not wanting to be this angry person, not wanting to be this person that abuses drugs, alcohol, emotional states, media consumption. We don't want to be that anymore. And so there's this, we see right away that we can look at change in terms of the second noble truth. And the thing about the second noble truth, it names in the first insight that these are the reasons that we get caught in the difficulty of life. Life's just the way it is, but we get caught in, we get so entangled because of these three thirsts. And then the practice, the second inside of the second noble truth, is that the cause of this thirst, the cause of clinging, grasping, is to be abandoned, to be temporarily, as best we're able, to be put down, as though we were holding something like this pen, and we hold it all the time, it's always holding it. And it's not like we have to throw away the pen. The pen's perfectly useful. But we don't have to hold it all the time, so we put it down. We just put it down. And that's as we run into our difficulties around implementing whatever change we wish to have, whatever resolve, and maybe resolve is a more empowering word for some of us than resolutions. I am resolved. I am resolved. And so we start to see that this wanting can be a wanting of that falls into greed, and it's motivated by greed, or it's a wanting that's where we're wanting a resolution where we're trying to fight the wanting of greed, wanting something, being discontent with what we have, so wanting more, or the kind of suffering that comes from our not wanting. And so we can start to more clearly discern, well, what is the resolution here? What is it that would happen that would actually bring me some better sense, stronger sense, fuller sense, deeper sense of well-being? So, maybe the way I've been thinking about this resolution isn't really the way that I should word it. Maybe there's a way that I can word it that is more clear to me, that's easier to stay in contact with, or is more actually inspiring. And again, for me at least, this idea of I am resolved, there's a kind of a commitment, and not so much the goal, but the commitment. So to give you an example of that in my own life, I am resolved to have more time for myself this year. So many people have told me I need to do this for so long. By long, I mean years and years. I don't mean months or days, but years and years. But I could not, for various reasons, make this a resolve. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. It wasn't going to happen that way. And I would try to sort of see if little moments were available to have more time for myself. But that didn't prove to be very effective for me, although for some people that can really work. At an earlier time in my life, it worked for me, but not in these last number of years. So I am resolved to take action, and I've planned those actions. I planned them well in the middle of last year to do these things. But the resolve is that I have to choose over and over and over and over again to not fill the space that I have set aside to be time just to be. And I have to do it over and over again. I know this because I've tried to do this in a haphazard way many times and failed, because I'm always willing to do something. My heart hears somebody saying, I need this, can you do that? And my heart goes, oh, sure, because it doesn't think. You know, that's not its role. It's not its role. So it's always willing. And so the resolve is a resolve of balancing wisdom and heart in this way. Or we could say wisdom and compassion, balancing wisdom and compassion. So what's that for you? That which you would seek to change? What's the wisdom in it? Can you see the wisdom? What's the compassion in it? Are the wisdom and the compassion aligned? Do you have a resolve, a resolution that actually in some way is kind of punishing yourself to get something you want? You know, that's not that one doesn't sacrifice. One stops opening the refrigerator door at last night with a resolve, and therefore that craving doesn't get fed. But that's not being mean to yourself. But you can have this hatred or this anger towards the fact that you open that refrigerator at midnight. And how wholesome is that? How wholesome is that? For you, you have to decide, I don't know. But that you start to hold change with wisdom and compassion, and those become screens, ways for you to know, reflect back what's really going on here now. And it reflects back. The Dharma's so well, you know, well formed, so able to take all of these different shapes in this way. And you know, we can have resolutions, both external and internal, interestingly enough, that come from an aspiration within our spiritual practice. And that we can have the same unskillful habits, unexamined habits towards our spiritual practice, and where we have something that would be a wholesome end, but the way we're going about it is very unskillful. We set up a goal that we're sure to fail, that will only discourage us, as that happens to many people at the end of their retreats, the first 10 or 15 retreats they do. They imagine their home practice going to be something that it doesn't turn out to be. So it can happen that way. But we learn how to do this. And so this alignment, which leads to aspiration, we suddenly start to understand on a more deeper level how important it is that we prepare ourselves for practice of insight. It's a skillful means to really establish our mindfulness, to be unavailable, and knowing what it means to be unavailable, to knowing what it means to have a choice. We have arrived in the empowerment of choice. And then understanding the importance of aligning with something that will allow us to be grounded in a mindset of wisdom and compassion, to whatever degree we have it in us at this given moment. It's not always in any regular folks. It may be in a Buddha, totally different. Maybe in a non-returner, totally different. I don't know about that. Once returner, probably not always. We can see why they would not be returning if it was fully ground. But I don't know. So we can look at our change in terms of the Dhamma in its external orientation. I want to have that bathroom wall painted. I want to find a new place to live. I want to have a new job. I want to have a new relationship with my coworker that I've had difficulty with, or I want to I want to I want to accomplish getting a raise this year. I want to find a new opportunity here within this situation I work, whether it's in the profit world, nonprofit world, even service, because sometimes we have these service jobs we do where we're not being paid, and yet we're not standing up for ourselves. We're not updating ourselves and our service activity in a way that really works for us. So external change like that. And in that way, we often will discover that there's some internal change that's necessary for this external change. So we imagine not opening the refrigerator door, just having the discipline, right, to not open the refrigerator door. No problem, you know. Not getting triggered by that person at work and getting entangled with them. I just don't speak. I just don't do that. And yet, how's it turn out? And therefore, we realize, we can realize, maybe it is wise to reflect, is there an internal change that's needed for this external change to generally occur? Also, when I know at about 11, if 12 o'clock's my refrigerator time, then I know at 11:30 to start to develop a kind of kindness to myself, that I'm in a reflective state of mind, not in this no, 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 because you've tried that and it hasn't worked. If it works, then you don't have to bother. You know, you're done. But sometimes it's an internal change. I am not someone my compensation, which has taken an external form, my comforting myself has taken an external form. Is there an inner way of comforting myself? Do you see that? And whatever it may be. So the external can lead us to internal, but also sometimes it's the internal, we're seeking an internal change, but we need to make an external change, because in this outer environment, we're never going to make that internal change. If you never feel safe, you're not going to feel safe. If you never feel safe externally, it's unlikely you're going to get the chance to develop a feeling of safety that becomes more and more independent of the conditions, whether they're safe or not. But there's too much, the nervous system's always reacting right now because it's genuinely not safe. And you don't want your nervous system to not be responding in that way. And so this just understanding the mind states of the third Satipatthana and how that there's internal and external experiences of an unsafe environment, of a loving environment. Do I want to stay with this person that I've been seeing for a little while now or not? What happens to me internally? You know, we do these interesting things, but what happens internally? What is my state of mind, heart? And so we start to have new guidelines for understanding how to resolve things in this way. Our motivation can be external motivation. You know, it's natural that we would want to have a place that we enjoy living. And we have to do it within our means and so forth. And so we employ, you know, we save money or whatever we do to be able to afford a nicer apartment or whatever it might be. We simplify our lifestyle and whatever we may move from a one bedroom to a studio apartment, whatever it may be, that we're making some external change in our life, because that external change will bring about an internal possibility. Again, do you feel that? Do you understand what I mean by that? That an internal change can actually bring about an internal possibility. And then, as I've already taken you through, an internal change can bring about an external possibility. So we start to have a spacious relationship, maybe, with our wanting to have something be different in our life. And we're treating it as possibility. We're resolved in what? In effort. The resolve is not in the result. Or again, we'd all be flying high. The resolve being in the effort means that we can have a feeling of authenticness, a feeling of empowerment, of agency, whether we succeed or fail in any particular effort at any particular time. To me, that's very valuable. That way, I don't feel like I'm fooling myself or tricking myself in some way or BSing myself, you know. I don't feel like that. It feels different. In my short phrase for this, which is my little trademark phrase, is that we are not practicing results. We are practicing practice. I don't usually do all of this along with that. I just say that phrase. We are practicing practice. Whew. Now that we can hold ourselves somewhat accountable to, right? Am I practicing right now or not practicing? And, well, it's not working. You're not concerned about it not working. You're concerned about practicing as best you're able. We do learn when we practice in a certain manner that if it's not helpful the way we're practicing, we change how we're practicing. But that doesn't mean that practice failed. That means that the way we'd envisioned practicing in this way failed. That for some of you, that may be in your Dharma practice around having the mind more collected and unified, what we, a term concentration, but it's maybe not the best word, samadhi, as just staying in samadhi might be somewhat better, but even that can get, we can get so much of our projections now. But we can practice collecting and unifying the mind. Lots of good ways of doing that. And in the same way, dealing with that difficult person, you know, they stay difficult. And like one of the things is to surrender. Oh, that's their nature right now, to be difficult. So I'm seeing that I have this little agenda that really they're going to not be difficult. Yeah. and they're being true to who they are right now. But how we relate to who they are, sometimes by leaving the room rather than getting pulled into it. Sometimes by going inside, because we can't leave the room, but going, practice, being amused with ourselves. Sometimes it's by saying internally, I know that this is hurtful. The person being talked about in front of others, the way this person talks to me. And that in my practice is that I be able to care for myself in the midst of that. That's my practice. And again, then there starts to be empowerment that is cross or it spreads out. It generalizes from the specific, because by being so specific, the empowerment we gain, the agency we gain, is oftentimes a general capacity of agency. So this is my third asking of this, and that means that you're supposed to go, well, I'll write down a question if I didn't understand, and you'll ask in a minute. That it is an agency. We gain agency that's generalized because of our modesty and our humble and our integrity and our dignity in the way that we're trying to deal with the change. And it's really not that, it's not that hard, but it's such an unlearning of the ways that our ego learned to make things happen. So the Dhamma can help us choose wholesome goals. All of the things we've learned in the Dhamma can help us with know what's wholesome goals. Remember, there's wholesome and unwholesome goals, and there's skillful and unskillful means. And we can have a wholesome goal, but if we employ unskillful means, we still cause ourselves or others or both suffering. It's really, it's important we remember that, because we can get myopic when we are so aware of our wholesome goals, and we love that goal, you know, but that doesn't mean that we're employing skillful means. We've all done this many, many times. It's just a matter of recommending that we, just remembering that we do that. And so likewise, just as we can, the Dhamma can help us choose wholesome goals, the Dhamma can really help us recognize that our means are not skillful, or that how we're relating as we're practicing those means that might be skillful in and of themselves, our anger, our frustration around it, our demand around it, it's undermining, it's poisoning a skillful means. It's turning it into something that it is not. And we didn't even realize that, because we wouldn't do that. But we didn't realize we were doing that. So this mindfulness and looking at skillful and what does this actually feel like can be so helpful. The Dhamma also can help us create priorities out of the many goals. We have so many things we'd like to have happen. How do we choose one or two that we're going to more emphasize? So many different things. This mind can invent new ones. You sit down and you're thinking about this, and lo and behold, you create a bunch of new ones. Because the mind likes to consider, as the Venerable Sumedho says, he will stay, I've been around him that much the last couple of years since the pandemic, but he would always state, the mind's capable of thinking of anything. It can always see another alternative, another possibility, something else. That's what the mind's, it's formed to do that. There's nothing wrong that it does that, but our careful attention and our sense of our own priorities is what keeps that in balance. And so it is in relation to priorities. And what makes a priority something that is of immediate importance, something that is doable, not a daydream kind of thing, and something that is from our spiritual practice, even though it may be a most mundane thing, onward leading. Just a few things about that. And then mindfulness also allows us to reassess our goals and so forth, and so many more things. So in this context, and we don't have much time, but I want to just invite a few voices in the room around you. And it's not really in the end about the first of the year. In the end, this is about us and change in general. But let's kind of hold to this. Let's honor our tradition. We're here on the first day of year, so let's talk resolution language. So if someone has a comment or a question, if you will raise your hand, please, your mechanical hand, that down at the reaction button at the bottom of the Zoom screen. Anyone have any question or comment? Yes, Jan.
I just wanted to say thank you for giving me permission to focus on the effort. I think that will shift a lot for me going forward. I hadn't even considered that a part of it.
The interesting thing So my voice,
my voice is
my screen.
My screen is yours.
Yes.
Is there a rumble? Huh. I'm going to try this for a moment. Nod your head if, because I can't, I've turned off my sound. Can you hear me okay? So, you know, the thing about effort is here we listen to the Eightfold Path over and over again, right? And one of the three practice skills, in addition to mindfulness and samadhi, is wise effort. And yet we don't exactly go, I'm going to really apply this in terms of the change I want in my life. We're falling into that thing where we're siloing our wisdom. So wise effort is over here in my Dhamma practice, but it's not over here in the course of my regular days, of which there's so many more of in the course of a year. So yeah, thank you for that. That's a very good thing to highlight. Anyone else? Okay, Ron.
Well, thank you, Philip, as always.
Oh, I realize you can hear me, right?
I can hear you just fine. Can you hear me?
Ron, did you hear me?
I hear you. Can you hear me?
Good.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. So as always, deep appreciation, I think, from all of us. I was struck by a different hearing of your talking about bringing about change. And what struck me was the image of sailing, whether a sailboat or a huge vessel. And the term in nautical, which I'm not an expert in, is to bring it about. And so I was struck for the first time about what's involved in bringing a ship around, bringing it about. And I wondered if you had any thoughts about that or could say any more about that, because as you continue to talk, I was struck by the power of the imagery for me, the bodily sensation of earth, water, air, in bringing a ship about, and what that feels like, and the interplay of inner and outer and intention and nature. It just felt like a visceral, direct experience for me. So I want to thank you for that.
I thank you for bringing it up, because I will now borrow it and use that in appropriate circumstances, because I think it's an excellent image. But more directly to you, lots of times some image like that is the form of understanding takes an image. And the other thing that was so encouraging to me about your statement was there was a felt sense of it. It was visceral. It felt physical. My practice and my teachings are so based on the felt sense and it's the orientation, like Vipassana insight is a felt sense insight. It's an intuition. It's not just a mental connection, a mental understanding. It's like a deep getting it viscerally. So yeah, so for you to be saying, okay, in this life you're bringing about this a change in course, and you could be in an eddy if you're a kayaker. And how do you get out of the eddy? You stop trying, right? You just surrender and let it throw you out. And so that would, if you're in a boat going down the Mississippi right now, whether or not you even decide to go down the Mississippi before these rains came, and your boat was required real judgment because the water's gotten so shallow. If you're in a lake, is it a lake that's your vessel is the boat, but your relationship is the boat and the environment, the water, so you're seeing what's wholesome and unwholesome in both what your boat's capable of doing, your vehicle, your vessel is capable of doing in these circumstances. And so the internal and external, and what you know how to do, like there's rapids that I loved. I haven't done this in many years now, but I love rafting. But there's certain level of the rafting that I wouldn't do, because it's beyond my capacity. I have not had enough experience in really, you know, these really rapid, strong rapids. And so I would not do that without a guide. And so you do in your own feeling. You use your image. You use that analogy and say, oh, how does that apply here? And they will not. That feeling will not always apply, but you test it out. And if it applies, that's great. And sometimes the very question may come up in the form of your image. You've tracked me on this?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.